This is DreamWords. Tom Corvin by Paul Storey. Chapter 7. In his first second underwater, the world calmed to a surreal dream of embryonic comfort. The wind, the rain, the bucking boat, the fight. The numbness of his hands, the white knuckles, the terror of falling in, were all gone. Replaced in that beat by a fluid that at first seemed warm and the pounding in his ears a mother's heart. And then he surfaced and entered hell all over again. The boat reared over him like a wild horse, its rider leaning out and down to run him under. The boy turned away, kicked out at the hull, tried to dive, but his life jacket wouldn't let him. The giant hand snapped forward and grabbed his foot. The foot kicked and sausage fingers smashed against the boat and let go. If the man fell overboard, or if he dived in after him, the boy wasn't sure. But suddenly he was there, arms pinning his, their combined weight dragging them down. The girl on the shore bobbing in and out of sight, screaming, wind and tide driving them towards a small clump of rocks, a breath, the gurgle of submerged surf, the death and rebirth of a storm, choking in salt lungs, a half breath, arms limp, rocks close, the land thrown at them, and underwater a sudden crack of bone, a scream, and the boy crawled up the beach as the girl dived to save the broken man as he writhed in pain in the edge of the world. Exhausted and confused, the boy watched the girl, her sodden blue jeans and pink jersey, out of kilter with her elemental struggle with death. She had the man's arms, but instead of pulling him inshore, a giant wave lifted them both from their feet and on the outflow carried them further out to sea. To their left, the boat and the rock closing, the snap of wood, the scream of metal on stone as the propeller spun to destruction, a brief smell of ozone. Something drew the boy's attention to the water between his position on the beach and the struggling figures. It was the petrol can, and beside it, the rope from the bottom of the boat, writhing like a sea snake, half submerged and likely to disappear at any moment. Somehow he got to his feet, staggered to the water, and grabbed a loop before the storm could steal it away. In 2 seconds flat, he'd tied a bowline as expertly as any climber and tossed it to the girl. The wind spat it back, and another wave washed the pair towards him once more. Recovering quickly, he tried again. They were only 20 feet away, but in the fury of the storm it could have been 100. The rope spun once over his head and flew on a lucky gust. The girl sprung from the water like a porpoise, thrust a hand through the falling loop, and hooked it in the crook of her arm. Pulling them to the beach was easy. Then, repositioning the rope under the man's arms, The girl and the boy heaved them in concert with the waves up to the top of the shore, no more than 40 feet from the cottage door. The rock around them ran red. It looked as though a fountain of blood had gushed from the man's arteries, spreading his life in a thin smear on the lonely shore. In fact, all he could find was a small cut on his forehead, and messy as it was, their immediate concern was to get out of the storm. His right leg looked strange, and the boy remembered the underwater crack and winced as he recalled the sound of the man's breaking bone. He seemed unconscious, but when another wave refloated him and dragged his injured limb over the pebbles, he lurched upright, grasped his leg with both hands, and bellowed like a bull on a sword. The cry of anguish galvanized the girl. "Help me!" she yelled. Together, the man trailing his broken leg, the girl to his right, the boy to his left, they staggered from the storm to the warmth and safety of the desolate and isolated white cottage. Chapter 8. Catriona was her name, his angel. She moved quickly, with the confidence of a general. If she'd let him, the boy could easily have collapsed in an exhausted bag of bones as soon as the door slammed behind him. But her brisk efficiency and her courage infected him like a drug. For some reason, he did not want to seem weak in her presence. And perhaps, for the sake of that same reason, keen to follow her orders. They set the injured man on a settee at the back of the house on the ground floor, and as Catriona removed the life jacket, the waterproofs, and cut the trousers from his bad leg, she told the boy to light a fire.
"It's the cold'll kill him, not the leg," she said.
By the time the fire raged in the grate, the man was down to a pair of white Daffy Duck boxers, and the girl rubbed him furiously with an enormous tartan towel. He tried to speak, but every time his mouth opened, the pain flew from his body in a plaintive groan that would terrify a ghost.
"Shh," she whispered, "save your strength."
And then to the boy she barked,
"The kitchen, boil some water, hot drinks."
By the time he did so and returned with 3 mugs of sweet tea, she had somehow managed to dress the man in a dry fleece and woolen long johns and got him into a bed in the far corner of the room. The boy handed her a tea. She looked at the steam rising from the brown liquid, brought her face close to the rim and pulled back sharply.
"It's too hot."
He obediently retreated to the kitchen, ran some cold water into the mugs and returned to her side. She held the warm liquid to the man's chattering lips and nodded her approval as he gulped the heat back into his body. Next, she pushed back a corner of the duvet and examined his leg, all the time whispering to him in a manner that the boy thought was meant to exclude him. Was she keeping him busy to keep him away? When he tried to give the girl a mug of her own, she nodded her head towards a table and he dutifully placed it there. He was just about to ask if he could help when she spoke with singular, abrupt efficiency.
"Through the front room. The drawer's on the right. You'll find a dry set of clothes. Take what you need."
"What about?" He was going to ask her about herself. She was as wet as he was, her long hair separated into dripping strands of licorice, but she cut him off.
"Just do it."
And then she softened.
"I'll be fine.
Dry yourself and change." The boy once more did as he was told. He found the drawers, and peeling himself layer by layer, he realized how right the girl had been. With her tacit permission, he collapsed inwardly, taking a full 5 minutes to remove the trousers that seemed to have fused with his skin. When at last he'd changed, he lay on the floor by the wet pile of cloth, fell asleep, and dreamt. The dream was fragmented, jumping from scene to scene in search of cohesion. He was in a car, a bald man driving. With a smile that slid around his face to grin at the boy from his left cheek, while his head remained motionless to the front. Headlights dazzled him. A curse from the driver. The boy's hand on the door. The door opens. Screeching tires, and then a tree. The door wrenched from his hand, flying and rolling and then running through the night, and soon he stood on a cliff top. The driver, his mouth back in place, the grin just as ugly. The mouth spoke, its head a pale moon. The words oozed like pus from his lips, floated across the night, and circled the boy's mind.
Corvin! Corvin! Corvin!
And then they stood together, a rock in the boy's hand. He swung it hard. The arc ended on the pale moon, and the pale moon crumpled over the cliff, and the boy dropped the rock and stared at his bloodied right hand. When he awoke, he was wrapped in a blanket, lying on an old sofa, his legs overlapping the curved arm at the far end, his head cradled by the softest pillow in the universe. A fire crackled behind the safety of a wire guard, the direct heat on his face infusing his body, and for the first time since he could remember, which admittedly wasn't long, he felt happy to be where he was. To his left, Catriona huddled under a blanket too, her feet tucked up in the musty armchair, her covered knees touching her chin, her hair brushed, dry and shiny again. Slowly, he turned his head to look around, trying at the same time not to waken her. They were in a room he did not recognise. There was no curtained bed, no chest of drawers. He couldn't recall getting there, nor the lighting of the fire. Although there was still a sense of disuse about the cottage, with two fires on the go, the warm blanket and the girl close by, the place, at that moment, was a cosy shelter from the storm that still raged outside. He was settling back to think about his situation, try to make sense of his fragmented thoughts, when he realised that the girl's eyes were open and she was staring at him. He attempted a smile and suddenly felt awkward.
How did I... You were cluttering the scullery. Very untidy.
They were silent for a while. The sound of crackling wood, the hypnotic effect of flame and heat, the storm shaking the cottage with each sudden gust. When at last she broke the spell, her words, innocently spoken, burrowed so deep into his subconscious that he knew they held a fundamental truth that lay at the centre of who he was.
You spoke in your sleep. Your name. Is it Tom Corvin?
And it fit him perfectly. It felt right. Something profound lay at the heart of those words. He knew his name. Tom Corvin. He smiled at her.
I think so.
Yes. Tom Corvin. But with the acceptance of his name came the memory of his dream and he thought of the blood on his hands when he first awoke at the base of the cliff. He remembered the rock, the brief jolt of the man's skull and then the give as the weapon penetrated soft tissue and the bald man crumpled over the cliff and died. He was Tom Corvin indeed. Tom Corvin, the murderer.
DreamWorks.com.